The Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football.
Hello, and welcome to the Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football. Well, after the week with all the goals, this is the week with all the cards. The referees have been dishing out plenty of penalties and reds over the weekend, and we're here to look at the CSL and ask whether it has any disciplinary issues, and if so, whether it's all down to those pesky tattoos. I'm your host, Steve Crooks, as always, and joining us are our regular experts on all matters Chinese football. Brandon Chen is in Beijing. How are you doing this week, Brandon?
I'm looking forward to talking to some mutilations this week.
A wave of mutilations, no doubt, and joined, as always, also by Cameron Wilson down in Shanghai. How are you doing this week, Cam?
Yeah, Steve, not bad. Hi, everybody.
Plenty of perkiness to start the pod. I mean, I guess we could talk about any number of red cards and penalties that have gone down this weekend. And actually, over the season so far, I think if we look at the stats a bit later on, it's a record in terms of the number of red cards that have been dished out. But, and I know we'll talk about one that's maybe more controversial, generally, not many of them have been that controversial at all. Brandon, overall, is this kind of a good weekend and a good season for CSL refereeing? Are the refs getting their act together after all the stick we've given them in the past?
I think if you want to say good, it's kind of hard to say that. Just looking at the match at Gongti on Sunday night, you had two penalties that both had to go to VAR. I really think part of the issue is that referees are relying far more on VAR than what they're actually seeing. And I think that has a bit to do with why we're seeing all of these red cards, why we're seeing all of this, is a lot of it comes down to the role that VAR plays in things.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with that. Do you think that VAR is kind of helping smooth some of the controversies, at least, Cam? Or do you feel that it's kind of spreading its tentacles a bit too far into the game this early in the season?
I think it's been all right, actually. I mean, it shouldn't really need to be the case where referees rely on it, but it sometimes looks like that. But I think in CSL, and historically, has always had this kind of cloud over it as regards the veracity of certain decisions. So in this way, I think that's a good thing, at least to help clear up and make more accurate the decisions which the referee isn't sure about.
Yeah, and we've spoken a little bit about this in the past in terms of the suspicions that, for, you know, valid historical reasons in some cases, people may have over referees in the domestic game. So maybe VAR has a kind of unique role to play there. And you mentioned a couple of the potential reasons, Brandon. Do you think that players getting excited about writing some of these apology letters and the general kind of moral panic that we're seeing about fouls is a contributing factor as well?
I mean, what I think it comes down to is, first off, it's early in the season, and so you have a lot of players that aren't fully match fit, are lazy, are sort of making mistakes that they, and mental errors and things that they wouldn't otherwise be making. I think that plays a bit of a role in things. And I also think we talk about it time and time again. I think you have to give some of the credit or blame to the CSL, the CFA, and there had to be something in preseason talking about sort of a crackdown on some of the rougher play, and that things were going to be punished slightly more harshly, and I think we're seeing that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a small data point size with just kind of five rounds gone, but undoubtedly we are seeing a lot of red cards thrown around. One red card that we have to talk about, I suppose, and one that was controversial and did clearly have an impact on the game in which it occurred, with it being so early, is Paulinho getting sent off for a high boot. I mean, lots has been said and written about this one already. It's one of those wonderful modern era debates where you've got two groups of people, neither of whom are ever going to be convinced by the other ones. Was this a violent act for you, Cam, or are we kind of running the risk of football becoming a non-contact sport?
I don't think it was a violent act. I think Paulinho just wasn't looking behind him, or he was kind of unsighted when he made contact with his opponent's face with his boot. Of course, I think that would probably be described at worst as reckless. I am not entirely 100% sure exactly what the rules say regards that, but given that he really didn't do it on purpose, and the ball was, it's not like he was stretching in a way which you would not normally try and get a ball in that position. So I think it was maybe slightly unharsh, to be honest.
Yeah, difficult to see any malice there for sure. And are you going to defend the Evergrande player as well here, Brandon?
It's one of those situations. Even from Cammy is going sort of back and forth, and you know, you don't want to completely put the blame on him, but realistically it was stupid, and it was, maybe it wasn't completely intentional, but it was reckless and it was stupid. And you know, the red card, maybe it was slightly harsh, but I mean, it's not without reason. I think anyone seeing that can completely understand why there's a red card, and also most football fans could understand sort of the other side of the argument, that sort of, yeah, it could go either way, but that it went that way, I don't think there's anything wrong with it.
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely see the arguments on both sides. I think, and Cam made a good point, actually, the rules, and this is one of the beauties of football, right? The laws are kind of intentionally vague and unclear in some places, and it's really down to how handball's another good example of this, right? How certain groups of referees are briefed by their associations, and whether we get consistency there. Do you think, Brandon, that this would always be a red card in the CSL, and we should at least say that that's going to be a consistent judgment from referees, or does it kind of open that danger of inconsistency and certain sides being favoured or otherwise?
Well, again, I think the referees have shown this season that they're tending to protect the players a little more than usual, and that's why we're seeing the number of red cards. I don't think it's out of the ordinary. And obviously, I think everyone who's not an Evergrande fan wants to believe there's a lot of conspiracies involving Evergrande in the CFA. So this sort of goes against all of those.
Actually, a couple of seasons back, you might remember Demba Ba was given a yellow card for a very similar offence, where I think it was Feng Xiaoting or an Evergrande player with a really high boot to the face, although it was recklessness more than, in fact it was recklessness, it wasn't anything malicious. But famously that was retrospectively turned into a red card. So if there's to be any review of the decision, and I heard that actually Evergrande have asked for it to be reviewed, it'll be very interesting to see what the final decision is.
Yeah, rumours and conspiracy surrounding the third-party club who had an interest in getting Demba Ba banned back then as well. But we won't be bitter, and we will move on to talk about what did happen on the pitch after he got sent off. Cam, even without one of your best players and down to 10 men, I mean, is that an excuse for losing against the worst team in the league in Rennes? I mean, Evergrande really threw it away here, didn't they?
They did. It was. I saw most of that game, actually. I really think that it doesn't matter what you say. I mean, their policy is to not pick their best team, and that is in their official policy. As long as they have that, then unfortunately, I don't see how they can really refute any allegations of not taking the game seriously. Or I don't see how they can defend themselves. Of course, getting a man sent off is always going to be a handicap for any team. Everybody who is a football fan knows this, but they're just leaving themselves open to this. And to be really honest with you, to be utterly frank, it's not a massively different thing from fixing a match. I mean, it's basically they're not doing their best to win. The reason for doing that is something which is not really a football reason. So I just think this is a really pretty ugly situation, and they had Tobias Browning on the bench, who's the defender, so that was the third foreign player was on the bench rather than being on the pitch. He didn't come on, I'm guessing that was tactical, but they could have had they could have played things differently, as you know. But I hate to say this, but I really think Evergrande are just opening a massive can of worms, and it's just going to get worse.
Yeah, I mean, Brandon, this really highlights the folly of limiting yourself to only two overseas players, even when you've got more in your squad. I mean, if one of them gets sent off or even injured, you're kind of in trouble then. I mean, this is the first time it's really counted against them. Do you think they're going to maintain this rule through the season, or as soon as the cracks open up, we're going to see them go back to picking three?
I mean, it'll be interesting to see how it's dealt with. I think Cammy's point there is a totally extreme. I mean, it's this, it's basically the similar to sort of resting players and everything. You know, you're not putting out your absolute top lineup for each match, but there's always reasons behind why you're doing it. Evergrande still looked like the team with 11 men. They looked like the better side for most of the match.
It's an official policy.
So what? They can have that policy. There's nothing wrong with the policy.
The policy is to not pick their best team. That is their official policy.
Why is that their best team? Why is having four foreigners better than having Chinese players? Why? Especially when you have national team players in your side. Why is that better?
Brandon, how long have you been watching Chinese
football?
You're trying to say that Evergrande's Chinese players are better than the foreigners. Is that what you're honestly saying?
I don't think that hands down it's automatically the better way of doing things.
I don't know, man. I think that's just, I'm pretty amazed that you think that. I really am.
I think it's not the red card
that generated the controversy here.
Yeah, I mean, again, though, back on the topic, I think Evergrande, they were the better side for much of the match, and they looked like they were the team with 11 men. They didn't look like the team with 10 men, and it just came down to maybe being a little tired late on and a little unlucky, and, you know, it's a big loss for them. It wasn't a match that they should have dropped points in.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see many of the top sides drop points against Renhe. They'll undoubtedly come back to regret that. Interestingly, you mentioned tiredness there, because I mean, we also saw Shandong lose at home to Tianmen Dalian, which is a horrible result. And Guan and Shanghai International Port Group scrape through against some really bad sides themselves. Do you think the ACL legginess kind of excuses all four of those sides after their excitations midweek?
I mean, I wasn't able to watch the SIPG match. Shandong has sort of struggled as of late. They haven't been quite what we expected. For Guan, it just sort of, Henan came to Gongti for a 0-0 draw, and they played for that. And it can be, for a side like that, you know, when sides come to these matches and play openly, then they get crushed. When they just totally sit back like Henan does, then Henan had a strong strategy. It was difficult for Guan to break down. You know, if not for that penalty for a while, I was thinking that Henan was going to get something on the counter and come away with a 1-0 win or something. So I think that penalty really opened things up. But credit to Henan that they came to Gongti with a strong strategy, and they were able to pull it off for much of the match.
It's kind of a general Henan away strategy from too many times watching them park the bus at Hong Kong as well. Going back to Shanghai International Port Group, question in from Jeff Cam. He's watched Shanghai International Port Group drop or nearly drop points against three bad teams in the last 9 days, and he's worried. Should they be worried? I mean, you can either argue that this is just their fixture schedule catching up with them, or maybe it's that kind of lack of investment in the squad and that creaky defence catching up with them as well. What are your thoughts?
I think winning when you're still playing, when you're playing badly, is a sign of a team which is powerful. And we spoke about SIPG the week before. Their defence is well known for, has been criticised quite heavily. So that's nothing new. But I don't really think, if I was an SIPG supporter, I would be concerned that perhaps they've kind of, I mean, the game against Wuhan, they didn't really look that great. But, you know, at the end of the day, they won the game. So, you know, what more can you say?
Yeah, and we'll talk about some of the ACL results a little later on as we kind of reflect on all of the sides' campaigns in the second half. One of the games that I did want to just draw attention to from the weekend, the Tianjin Derby, we gave it a little bit of a preview last week. It seems we're often talking about the politics of football off the field and how bad the sides are on the pitch, but a good number of fans turned out there, unlike in many of the stadia, it must be said, this weekend, and a couple of beautiful tifos from the home fans with some kind of local fan pride from the Taidar fans. Should we give Tianjin football culture a little bit more credit, Cam?
Yeah, definitely. It was an absolutely magnificent tifo. I think they're a team who's always kind of been there or thereabouts in terms of, well, being more near the base of the table rather than the top, but that doesn't mean they don't have a decent support. I mean, I think it was interesting to see it was actually a pretty good attendance. I think it was 30,000 plus for Tianjin Derby. I think it was pretty impressive to see a number of people, and obviously the Derby there adds something to a game where if it was, for example, if it was a random team from who'd been promoted to the CSL instead of Ten Hag back a few years ago, you wouldn't be seeing that level of crowd. So in that way, it shows you that there is a kind of a level of interest in Tianjin for football, which perhaps hasn't been given recognition.
I'd love to go to Brendan for some comments on Tianjin fan culture as well, because obviously there's no love lost between Beijing and your neighbours there, but you've got to respect the effort they put in over the weekend, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was okay. The tifo was nice and everything, but really, you know, 30,000 plus fans for the derby when Tianhai, Trenjian, whatever you want to call them, was getting 20,000 plus last season for their home matches is really, it shows how far they've fallen. I mean, Tianjin, Teda has never really been a well-supported side. They've always sort of struggled attendance-wise. And actually, Trenjian, this sort of noisy neighbor that came up all of a sudden, has sort of overtaken them attendance-wise. The derby attendance, it was what it was. It was a decent match. It was an entertaining match, but... great tifo, but that's about it.
A summary of their season at the end of the year as well, potentially. I do think you need to have a bit of an asterisk against some of those high-spending sides crowds, but we'll move on. And this is actually where we'll take a break and finish our review of matters gone by with the regular Phenomenon of the Week section.
The Wild East Football Phenomenon of the Week.
Now, our winner last week was Litia. I can't remember how many of his different body parts we've nominated through the young season so far, but his outspokenness, I think, was what got him over the line ahead of Australian Rules Football's Port Adelaide and Ovione Carlo, who I'm never going to nominate again because he proceeded to miss an absolute hatful of chances as soon as I'd sung his praises. All that being said, I get to go first this week. I'm going to play it a little bit safe. I think it's hard to go beyond nominating Nico Yanaris as the first naturalised player to hit the back of the net in the CSL. Cam, you're up second. What or who or what was your phenomenon that really caught your eye over the past week?
My phenomenon, going back to the discussion earlier, is Evergrande's politics over football policy. I think we owe it to everybody to remind everyone of this and not let Evergrande away with it. So this is the first time where you could have argued that they've lost the game in part because of this. So that's my phenomenon this week.
And Brendan, hot on the heels of your last win, how are you going to continue the streak this week?
So you pretty much stole my thunder there. So I'll come up with something on the fly and go with the red card. That seems to be a theme so far this season.
Yeah, the stats are 16 red cards in 5 rounds. That's by some way the most that we've had, and I think a lot of those kind of VAR-related reasons potentially behind that. So a mixed bag, as always, of phenomena there. We do look forward to seeing how the listeners vote and also encourage them to write in some of their more creative suggestions as well, if they want to. So, starting to look, well, both backwards and forwards, we'll have a bit of a chat about the Champions League now and then wrap up with a preview of a couple of the CSL games to look forward to. All four of the groups, actually, in the East, halfway through in the ACL, are really fascinatingly poised. Let's kind of go through them one by one. Starting in Group E with Shandong, despite stuttering at home, they're reasonably placed. 5 points from 2 games, they're in second. They have played 2 of their home games, admittedly. If they get a win in Malaysia or a decent result at home to Gyeongnam, that they're probably going to make it through. Brandon, do you have confidence in them making it through to the knockouts from here?
Yeah, I do. I think, they've struggled in the league. We've talked a little bit about that, but I would be slightly surprised if they don't make it through the group stage. And I know we're going to take it group by group, but I think overall, if you're looking at things, you really have to be surprised at, considering how both Cammy and I felt about things at the start of the season, we're looking at quite possibly all four Chinese sides getting out of the group stage. And so I think Shandong, maybe the league struggles are you know, due to the ACL, but they should get out.
Yeah, I mean, we were down on their prospects earlier on. I've got a sneaky feeling, Cam, about Shandong that presuming they do make it, now they might go further than any of the other Chinese sides. I mean, they're going to sort their defense out at some point with players like Pella and Fellaini, that they're always going to be dangerous going forwards. And they, unlike the other sides, are kind of out of the title race already, so they could really go for it. Do you fancy their chances as much as I do, or am I kind of looking for some crumbs of comfort for them already there?
I think your theory is pretty solid. They're not a team who I think many people would have put in the favourites for... amongst the favourites for the CSL title. I think a lot of people would have put them as the best of the rest, but they look like they, if they are the team which goes furthest, I think that would be not a surprise. But I mean, generally speaking, I mean, all the teams are in reasonably strong positions to go through. Of course, it's pretty tight in every group for all the Chinese teams. But of course, I mean, I'm on record of having been in this slightly embarrassing position of having a conspiracy theory that the Chinese teams don't want to go that far this year because it's a World Cup year and there's going to be this massive focus on China, making sure China got off to the best possible start in the World Cup qualifiers and so on. But that part of the season is some way off yet, and all the clubs getting out of the group stage would not clash with that. So my mother-in-law came in the house and she's true. Just loud as hell. I don't know if you can hear that in the background.
We need to keep that in there. We need more mother-in-law action in the final cut of the pod, I think.
I don't know how much of that you could hear.
I was going to say with Cam, not enough. We need more that kind of middle-aged Shanghainese being shouted. That's going to redeem the pod. All right, Brandon, I'll come to you first for the next one as well. You said you think all four sides are going to go through. If one of them doesn't make it, I actually think it might be Evergrande. On the face of it, it looks like they're sitting pretty in the group. You know, they've won a couple of... Well, they're one of three teams on 6 points with Melbourne on zero in that group. I think there's a massive asterisk against them, though, because both of their home games were effectively thrown by the away side, kind of sending a weakened lineup there. They've got a long way to go to Australia for a game that they're going to have to win. They've got two tricky trips to Korea and Japan as well. I'm not sure they're going to make it. Do you think they're going to scrape over the line? Do you think they've maybe still got a bit more of an aura in continental competition, whereas Chinese sides have started to figure out how to have a go at them?
It's really difficult to predict things when you have a really odd group like that, where three sides are on 6 points and one side is on 0 points. But I do think that your breakdown there is really accurate. Evergrande have a couple of tough games, that trip to Australia. I'm not sure. If I was betting on the Chinese sides, especially group-wise, I think that Shandong should be. There's no reason why Shandong shouldn't be through, and I can't see SIPG not going through. But, you know, Evergrande and potentially Guoan as well would be the two sides that I might bet against not going through right now.
Wow, betting against your own side. You do bring the pessimism sometimes. Cam, from a more neutral perspective, how do you feel about Guoan's prospects? I mean, that Group G is fascinating. It's going to be a right royal scrap all the way, I think. They've won one, drawn one, and lost one. Do you think they're going to pull it together in the second half of the group stage?
I don't know. I think Guoan are... and Brandon can correct me if I'm wrong, but it's been a couple of seasons since they've been in the Champions League. I expected them to kind of be more... be doing a little bit better with it, because I mean, certainly they made some excellent signings in the close season. 1-1, drawn one, lost one. I guess it's not a bad start, but I think I mean, the way result against Buriram was quite impressive, because they're a team who are they're not a team who's like a Champions League giant or anything, but they are the best team in Thailand we've seen in the past few years, and they've done all right in recent years.
Bergama just the round before crushed Junbuck, which was right. sort of an odd result. And I think that's sort of the issue here is that group is sort of the group of death. And so Guan, it was always going to be difficult. And the game against Urawa was just unbelievable for how Guan failed to score despite 20 plus shots on goal to zero, basically. It's a really, really difficult group. And I think it sort of comes down to what happens against Buriram at Gungti and possibly if they can get a point from Junbuk or away at Urawa, they'd be through, but it's not going to be easy.
I was going to mention the Urawa game. Guan were very unlucky not to win that. So despite my kind of protestations about how serious or otherwise Chinese teams are going to take the Champions League this year, so far I think they've been doing their best, and certainly I think Guan are actually a little bit unlucky not to be in the top two of the group at the moment.
With the way that the fixtures play out, they've still got two home games coming up back-to-back, in fact, so they could well be going to Japan only needing to get a draw in that last round. Looking and moving on to Group H, where we have Shanghai International Port Group, they're in a similar position as well, actually. 1-1, drawn 1, lost 1, getting themselves into all kinds of trouble, failing to beat Sydney. They also have two home games left. But that trip to Japan in between them could be really tricky for them as well. Do you think they're going to rue dropping points in Australia, Ken?
I mean, they must have been pretty bummed not to come away from Sydney with all 3 points. I think SIPG were... I mean, they've clearly got a little bit of a stronger squad. I mean, as an aside, I always like reading the Australian football media talking about... Asian Champions League. I've yet to see a single story from Australia talking about a Chinese team which doesn't use the phrase cashed up. So don't get more cashed up than SIPG. So it's the same situation in every group. All the Chinese teams are still in reasonably decent positions to qualify. So same goes for SIPG, really.
Yeah, they're all in charge of their own fate. I mean, one of the great stats from that Australian media has to be pointed out. I don't know if it's true, but it's one of those stats that you want to be true because it sounds so good, that Oscar makes more money than the entire A-League salary cap, which really kind of gives you a little pause for thought there, doesn't it? Brandon has nailed his colours to the mast by saying he thinks all four sides could well go through. If I pushed you for a number, Cam, how many do you think are going to make it at this point?
It could easily be all four. I don't think you could argue against that strongly. But of course, it's none of the teams are in a position where they can afford to take it easy for the rest of the group's campaign. So we just need to wait and see.
Yeah, I would say that I do think that all four have a really legitimate shot. I'd walk that back a little bit and say I guarantee at least two to go through. I think anything more than two is sort of a bonus, but I think that we should at least see two teams in the next stage.
Yeah, I think three is a safe prediction. It could be all four. If one of them doesn't make it, I reckon it's Evergrande. I'll go on record and say that and happily be proved wrong if they manage to turn it around. So focusing back on domestic matters then, some interesting fixtures coming up in the next round as well. One that's been making headlines for the lack of being able to get away tickets. Brandon, it's kind of a greater Beijing derby with the trip to Hebei, the cauldron of Langfang, awaiting. I know that they might not have too many fans there because of all of the off-field antics, but I mean, Guan must be looking forward to this because, I mean, Hebei, yet again, not living up to the squad that they have there.
Yeah, I mean, Hebei, first off, to go into the situation a little bit, it's sort of interesting. The away ticket, or they've limited away tickets pretty severely, and the home tickets that are available for online purchase are available to everyone in China except people with Beijing ID cards, because all Beijing ID cards start 010. And so anyone with that as a start to their ID card cannot purchase a ticket for the match. So they're trying to prevent sort of a Beijing takeover this time around. But about this Hebei side, you know, it's not quite the strong side that they've had in previous years, and I just, you know, it's they've been sort of all over the place. Losing to Chongqing was pretty pretty bad. You know, the draw against Tianhai also disappointing. They really haven't done very much this year. You know, beating Shenhua, but that doesn't say very much. So it should be an easy 3 points for Guan and 6 straight victories in the league.
You got there before I could correct you. I mean, I think that the real tragedy of this is that both of the Renhe fans who were thinking of going to support the home side are going to have to look at an alternative arrangement now. Cam, moving on to one still cashed up club facing again a former cashed up club, to get our quota of that adjective in there. Shanghai International Port Group go to struggling Tianjin Tianhai. Is this a chance for them to rotate? Or kind of looking at Jeff and many of the other fans' concerns that we looked at earlier, do you think they should go with their strongest side here and kind of make a bit of a statement and get a bit of confidence back into the team?
Yeah, I think they have to take this game very seriously. We spoke a lot about Tianhai. There was a point before the season started where they were lost a few players to Evergrande and all this pseudo under 23 development team stuff. But anyway, they've turned out to be a team who were always they've always had a pretty strong squad the past couple of seasons. Although they changed ownership, now they're owned by the Tianjin FA and so on and so forth. They don't seem to have the same cash as they did, but that doesn't mean to say their team isn't still very good, and SIBG certainly can't afford to take it easy against them.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I think Tianhai, I know that we all went quite big on them, and don't worry about their prospects, they'll manage to stay up. They've started badly. I think they might still make it, but I'm not sure this will be the game where they catch on fire. I think one game that for the neutral is going to be fascinating viewing, Brandon, is Evergrande against Shandong. This was a big game in the title race last year. It's unlikely to be so this year. But with them both wavering in their own way, this could be a really nervy one because neither team can afford to lose this. Do you think either of them are going to go for the win, or do you anticipate a kind of tense one-all situation here?
I mean, it's certainly going to be a difficult match. You know, this is sort of the first headline match we have of the season. I mean, you know, there have been the four derbies so far, and those have been somewhat. I mean, they've been sort of melodramatic for the most part. This one is sort of the two big sides that we really would look at as title contenders, and with Evergrande missing Paulinho, and to go back to sort of not to belabor our earlier debate, but honestly, I do think that Evergrande's Chinese players could be better than Tyus Browning and Park Ji-soo. So I think that the players that they have to replace Paulinho with, it's going to be difficult. It's not season past where they have a dearth of top foreign strikers or something. So this could be Evergrande dropping points again, although I do think being at Tianhe, Evergrande is always always strong at home. And you know, with the weather down there, the constant rains and everything, it's going to be tight. I do have a feeling that maybe Evergrande pulls it out, but it's going to be one of the more interesting matches we see this round, if not the most interesting.
Which Chinese players do you think are better than Tyus Browning?
I mean, Zhang Linpeng, Feng Xiaoting, Mei Fang, basically, Liu Yiming. I'm not sure, honestly, having not really seen him play very much at Sunderland, I'm not sure how to rate him, but I don't think he's really head and shoulders above what they currently have in defense.
So why did they sign him?
Because he'll be a naturalized player next year. He won't count against their foreigners, and I mean it's more backup. It's the same thing, honestly, with Yanaris. Yanaris has played well so far, but he isn't. I mean, he's maybe a slight step up from Chi Zhongguo, but he's not unbelievably better, but at the same time, you're not going to find a Chinese player that good, that cheap, that easy to bring into your side. So it makes sense to go after a guy like him.
Right, but I agree that these... I think it's particularly Unaris's case. It's not night and day better than Chinese players, but I still think both of these guys are significantly better than Chinese domestic players. Otherwise, it just wouldn't be here. I think that's the bottom line.
No, I disagree.
Browning's going to be an interesting one because we've not seen much of him, you know, in recent years in England either. Maybe one of the reasons they sign him is that he's simply, once he's fully nationalised, younger than a lot of their domestic, certainly defensive players that they've got. But, I mean, to move away from the big teams, we've got one kind of topic suggestion from a listener, Harry Bell on Twitter, that we talk about Chongqing and their project of shithousing it to the ACL for West China despite being written off every week. Cam, do you want to give them some love or do you want to write them off again and say that the dream ends at Dalian this coming weekend?
They are, but they're not going to qualify for the ACL. There's no chance of that. The top four clubs in the CSL are really clear. That is Guan, Evergrande, SIPG, and I think Shandong. Chongqing are... they're a team who actually managed to pull out pretty good results now and again. They seem to be able to sometimes come up with a win where you didn't expect it. I mean, the men have beat Evergrande a couple of times in recent years, but I really don't think they're going to be anywhere near the ACL places, maybe in the top half of the table, who knows, but they are. You want to see them representing China in Asia next year.
Yeah, I mean, particularly, I think we need to point out with ACL qualification, it's the top three from the league and the cup winners as well. And in the last couple of years, the cup winners have tended to be in the top four. So, yeah, seeing them breaking into that top three, really quite tricky. One other question. Brandon, I'm going to come to you with this one. Seb wants to talk about pitches again. He's been doing a lot of digging, unlike the groundsman, into the farce at Wuhan. The CFA saying that, you know, one of the reasons they had to cancel that game was they didn't want to lose face. He raises a very good point. Do they not feel they're going to lose face when it comes to lower leagues? Is it only international broadcasts and the top flight leagues? What does the CFA really care about? Personally, I feel that a little bit too much is being made about this pitch debacle. I think we see this kind of thing often, but I don't know. What are your thoughts on the latest rumblings there?
Yeah, to this specifically, I think way too much is sort of being made out of it. I think part of the reason why the CFA is coming out and taking the blame for this is that Henan fans are starting to say that I think they've hired lawyers and they're trying to sue Wuhan or something to get their money back for their travels and everything. And so I think that the CFA has stepped in and said, hey, we were the ones that did it, so it's now Wuhan, and you're not going to get very far suing the Chinese government. At the same time, what I'd say, you know, a lot of these stadiums are, you know, northern China are in relatively cold climates. As we talked about, it snowed in Liaoning 2 weeks ago. It's hard to maintain a solid, beautiful green pitch without a ton of investment. And, you know, especially in these lower leagues where there isn't a lot of investment to begin with, the pitches aren't in that bad a shape. They might not look very beautiful, but they're still in decent enough shape. And I think if you watch enough of the lower divisions all over the world, it is what it is. So it's sort of making a bit too much out of things there.
Actually, I disagree with both you guys. I think this is an issue which has happened for a long time. And Bron, your point about some parts of China being inhospitable as regards development of proper grass, I think that's a fair point. But at the same time, if you look at Wuhan, this isn't a part of northern China, and their pitch was just a complete mess. And there's no excuse for it. And it just shouldn't be happening, especially it's years now we've had all this focus on improving Chinese football from above and then the significant levels of investment. I know Wuhan are a team who's just got promoted, but it just shouldn't be like this. And I think it's a good thing that the fans are getting a bit uppity. I just feel that at this point in Chinese football development, we shouldn't be, it's true to say we shouldn't be talking about pitches because it just shouldn't be an issue.
Yeah, I think one kind of argument maybe why we should be talking about pitches more as well, to kind of loop back to the start of the show, with all this moral panic about, you know, players raising their foot high to control a ball and you know, kicking a ball in anger at other players and so on, I've seen way more really nasty injuries from bad pitches than I have from violent play, you know, watching games over the years. So, I don't know, Brandon, I'm slowly convincing myself that maybe we should be talking more about pitches.
The issue at the CSL level is pretty disappointing that we had that issue in Wuhan. But I think when you look at League One and League Two, especially, where the pitch issues are, for the most part, they're mostly in relatively far northern provinces. So, I thought the CSL and specifically money had gone into sort of pitch management and everything. And so, yeah, that's a significant enough issue. But I think people are trying to make a little too much out of it across the spectrum of Chinese football.
I think part of the problem as well is that people kind of got used to this. People have kind of been used to seeing crappy pitches. And I think suddenly the Chinese football ecosystem in general was actually starting to wake up and think, hang on a minute. We see the clubs over the world, no matter where they are, at least at the higher levels of the game, have managed to have a decent pitch. It's nothing which is that complicated. Even in countries in like the far north of Europe, they might use AstroTurf or something like, or some kind of semi-synthetic surface. So at the end of the day, it's not with China's capabilities to provide a high-quality playing surface for professional football.
Well, and there we go. We did get our long conversation about pitches in the end anyway. It's been a ranging discussion. I've not had to send anyone off or have a VAR review yet, so let's draw a line under it before we need to go back to those disciplinary measures. Thank you, as always, to both of you for, you know, some insight. Good to get a bit of debate engendered on the pod as well. And listeners, if you do enjoy the pod and the debate, then please do continue to rate, review, share the podcast, and consider contributing for the time and effort that goes into the pod on Patreon. You can find all of those links wherever you downloaded this podcast or on the Wild East Football website. Cam, thanks as always for joining us. We actually got through the whole pod without asking you about the decor down in Yueshoshan from your recent trip as well.
Yeah, I was trying to think of a witty pun for the Yellow Bowl Stadium, but I'm afraid I just have to hold it in this week.
And before we crack up completely, and that was actually unintentional, believe it or not, Brandon, thanks for your insight as always, and let's see how long that undefeated domestic run holds up.
Yeah, and let's see how many more goals Shenhua will put into their own net. And at the same time, I feel odd that I'm the one sort of defending Evergrande and ready to go another couple more rounds. We'll save that for the next pod.
Well, listeners, we had a little technical trouble at the end of the recording there. There is some rather amusing outtakes that we can share with premium content subscribers at some point in the future, so we will be hanging on to those. But for the time being, thank you once again for listening this week. Hope you enjoyed the show. We'll be back with you again very soon. But for this week, this has been your Chinese football podcast brought to you by Wild East Football, and I've been your host, Steve Crooks.
The Chinese football podcast brought to you by Wild East Football.
全场比赛结束了，我们终于出现了。